In this episode, discover how video content amplification and paid media work together.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuds.
Yo, yo, what's up? All right, interesting topic today. We're going to be talking about video content amplification and paid media and how they work together. And 2 weeks ago or so, I spoke at one of the leading digital marketing agencies in the country, Vertical Measures, about how to accelerate the sales process by leveraging the power of video. And, you know, I think the world of their CEO, Arnie Ken, and the quality of work him and his team does. So let's take a few moments and talk with Eric Solon, the director of amplified content at Vertical Measures. Eric, what's up?
Howdy. Pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you, man. You know, your office, my office, right across town. It's really surprising to me that when Wirebuzz is out speaking at a conference and Arnie Ken or Mike Huber is on the podium from Vertical Measures, I'm like, way to represent Scottsdale, Phoenix, right? On a national stage, it's pretty remarkable.
Definitely. That's one of the things that drew me to the agency in the first place. Mm-hmm. I've had a chance to already be on the circuit myself, went to Dallas, did some speaking specifically on amplification strategy and tactics. So I was definitely drawn to that opportunity. It's been fun.
Beautiful. Well, you're with a great group of very smart guys. And today we're going to be talking naturally about the amplification. But to me, as we get into the world of video marketing, what I'm really seeing is there's a lot of non-digital marketers that sell video without even realizing that video needs to be amplified. It needs a strategy to go with it. We're going to spend a little bit of time. I look at that as like the railroad tracks, how you move somebody through a buyer's journey. And that last stage is often the amplification stage, how you get them to convert. And so we'll spend a few moments. In fact, let's just get right down to it. How do you begin to design a cross-channel amplification strategy?
Sure. So it's great that you bring up the funnel and the path to conversion. That's where we start. Speaking with the client and getting a sense for what is their understanding of where their audience is first meeting them. Where is their audience getting their answers when they start to research their product or their service? What is most important to them when they're about to make a decision? And then taking a look at what platforms or channels those conversations take place on, that will help us shape a full funnel paid strategy for how are we going to reach out and increase the overall footprint of their content and actually get in front of some new audiences. So we start with that research and kind of get a sense of what they know about their current customers.
Okay. Now, does that, when you say you start with that kind of research, is that like a strategy session on the front end?
Yep. Definitely part of the kickoff call, or even before the kickoff call, I would prefer to have enough background and have had enough conversations with the client that I already have a sense of where we need to go. So usually we have a lot of momentum even going into that first call.
Okay. I find it interesting. In fact, I'm way obsessed with what you just said, because most content creators or most people that are buying content to be created start at the creation phase. And really, you have to take a couple of steps back and start thinking about what is that ultimate goal look like? What's the ROI? And then from there, it's like, what is the call to action that meets that ROI? Does it baffle you that most people just start in the creative stage?
Before I accrued some experience and had conversations, maybe it would not have. But at this stage, yeah, definitely. Because of all the data that's available, because of all the knowledge that they have at their fingertips, and by they, I mean a brand, would know about their audience, but they just may not be putting it all together into a cohesive conversation. People are already talking about your brand, your service, your product, but just putting that together into a fluid conversation online. Where does it start? Where's the middle? Where's the end? My wife is in HR, and she always talks about different coaching lessons and things that she gives to the employees. And the one that stuck was begin with the end in mind. And I've very much taken that on as a mantra in my own career, because if the client is building content without the understanding of the objective or the understanding of what the audience's intent is at that moment, You may not have much to target when it comes time to when you finish the video or when you finish the article or the blog. So we try to start there. What do you start with the end in mind?
Yes. Right? Now, I know from our earlier conversation, you have two kids, 1 4 and 1 at the age of 1.
That I do.
Right? And whenever you pile the kids into the car, you've already got a destination in mind, right? It's already detailed out. You're like, we're going to grandma's house. You already know what the end goal is. And then the tactics are how you're going to get there.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
But I guess what I'm baffled about is, and maybe it's because I've been in digital marketing for so long that it's second nature, but I'm baffled that people start at the wrong, they start at the right spot with the end goal for everything in their life until they're in an area that might be unfamiliar, but laying out the map is always the tried and true way to get to a final destination.
Sure. I think a lot of what goes into that is brands are so immersed in their product or their service that they kind of get blinders on to, you know, yourself being very familiar, and you looked at the competitors and you looked at all the benefits, like, you know, it all like instinct, and what you think content is supposed to do versus what your audience needs to know could be totally different. And, you know, creating the content based on those instincts versus actually going and researching your audience and asking them right. what the first questions are and what is most important at that first stage versus when you're about to make a decision. They kind of skip that and maybe go on instinct a little too much.
Too much.
And you can put a ton of money into content that's just poorly targeted or you know, just doesn't answer the right questions.
Eric, I honestly am always telling people the more senior I get in my marketing career, the more I question every assumption, even my own, and am a much better marketer when, after that first meeting with the client, behind closed doors with just my team, we can battle out some ideas. And mm-hmm. then the one that's the champion that remains standing, that has the most stability and less vulnerability, that's the one I want to run up the flagpole. But first, let's question our assumptions. Let's battle it out. Let's come up with the right idea. And then let's test it.
Sure.
Right? I love that. Look, earlier, we were talking about cross-channel amplification strategy and how you get started. Part of my job with Video Marketing Mastery is whenever there's a big name that needs to be defined, I like to make sure that we bring everybody in the audience along on the journey. What do you mean by cross-channel amplification strategy? I mean, that's a lot of words to digest.
It is. It's a fancy word for perhaps something that's pretty simple and that we all encounter on a daily basis when we research and make decisions. But what we are referring to there is, where is that, like, if you were to use an analogy, a conversation with someone you meet for the first time, where did it happen? Was it at a bar? Was it at the local Walmart? You know, where did that initial conversation happen? What did you talk about? What was that initial impression like versus, you know, the second part of your conversation? Did you tell jokes? Did you get into politics? What was the meat of it? What did you get out of it?
God forbid you talk politics. Exactly. Can't do that nowadays.
Not today. But so online, you know, same thing. Are you know, is your audience becoming aware of you on a channel that you may not even be aware of? Are they talking about your product on a social channel or a specific platform?
So a channel could be like Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or Instagram.
When we refer to channel, and I know this changes depending on the conversation, but when I refer to channel, it's like paid search, paid social, a display avenue, email. These are all avenues that we can get in front of an audience. When we refer to platforms on those channels, we're getting a little bit more specific to Facebook or Instagram or Pinterest. But as the conversation pertains to strategy, we get a little bit more specific because your audience could be in one place, but not on Facebook. Maybe the conversation is happening on LinkedIn. So you need to understand where that's starting. And then often, you know, when you raise awareness for your product on, let's say, LinkedIn, the next thing they're going to do is go on to a search engine, start researching you, start asking questions. So if you haven't also created a campaign that listens for those questions and customizes an answer and is aware that they've just met you on a social channel, so now what's the next piece of the conversation? That's the start to a cross-channel amplification strategy.
I don't know why. I just had a, like one of these great moments where I wanted to reach over and high five you. But when you said, you know, setting up a process of listening, that's so damn smart. And most marketers don't do it. They don't spend enough time. We created a campaign called Breast Cancer Answers. We started it in 2011 after my stepmom was diagnosed. And what we did is we asked patients all over the world to submit in their questions. Okay, we listened first. When they submitted in their questions, that was also demand. Our audience is exercising demand. And within 24 hours, we replied back to each one of those patients with a personal video from one of the world's leading rock stars in breast cancer, answering that question on behalf of that patient, and then it got added to the library. Now, I knew from the beginning that that listening tactic would give us demand. It would help us supply with video, and you always want to have your supply match demand. But I also knew that at some point it would be unscalable, and that was part of our tactic when we grew up out of phase one and went into phase two, because we had such large demand that we couldn't do that. And I knew it was a problem when I would wake up and there would be 80 plus new questions from when I went to bed to when I woke up. And that's when we switched over into phase two. But when you know what people are asking for, wow, you really have something valuable in the way that you can cater to them, right?
Definitely, like gold.
Like gold.
And it's also, you bring up a good point, because it's also a good motivator to having your content and promotion teams work very closely with one another.
Yeah.
Because that listening should happen at the beginning, but also while you're promoting content, listen to how they're interacting with what you hoped was going to create engagement. And if it doesn't, find out what the feedback is. So a lot of times when we're amplifying content, especially on a social channel, we're also stimulating conversation, and we have very unique insight into what actually happened here when we put this content out in the wild and what can we learn from it. Then we go to the content team, give them that feedback, and it can help shape our future engagement. So it's very, very valuable.
All right. I want to spend a moment just talking about the amplifying content. When you say amplifying content, you're talking about engaging an audience. Maybe does optimization fit into amplification, or is engaging and an ad spend amplifying? And the reason I ask is everybody kind of breaks it down slightly different.
Sure. No, that's a very good question. I think amplification is kind of a buzzword that deserves a little demystification. To bring it to the highest level, I would describe it as the difference between using an owned or an organic channel to allow people to come to you and find you, versus amplifying is any time that you're using any channel to reach out into an audience and get in front of them proactively. So in some occasions you're paying for that promotion. But something like email, for example, you could run that yourself, you know, design lead nurture workflows that are customized based on user behavior on your site and what they information they already gave you through a form that technically you're not going to pay, other than maybe the interface or the platform you're using, but you're not going to pay for that email, but you're still using it to nurture and amplify a piece of content that you are, based on your research, the best next piece of the conversation for this particular segment of your audience. How do we draw them back in?
Okay. 80% of customers or prospects are now going through a buyer's journey before they interact with a salesperson, and how you amplify or how you progress that conversation is an essential way to making sure that they have all the essential pieces. So when they do burn time with a salesperson, they've got a foundation and ready to have a smart conversation.
Yep.
Right.
I think now more than ever, audiences are used to having that control, being able to put up those barriers, so to speak, as far as when do they actually want to talk to you. In some cases, they never have to talk to you. Amazon, for example.
Right.
So I think it's changed a bit from maybe a few years ago when someone would receive these customized emails and it was kind of surprising, maybe a little creepy. Now it's almost an assumption that you should be followed up with. it should be customized and personalized to the journey you just had or what you were just interested in. And now if you're not doing that, it's actually sticking out even more so as like, okay, why didn't they do that? Like it's you just instinctually reach for your phone because you're going to get a follow-up email or something. So I think the shift is already happening. And if those strategies aren't into place, it's really part of your reputation online and how people view the brand and how they view the audience and whether they're trying to take care of you or not.
It's such an important topic. It's so under-discussed. We do probably 20 or 25 conferences a year. Right now, our team is in Las Vegas working the Pain Week conference, and I'm not into pain, so I stayed here at the office. and so one of the things that our team always reports back to me on is how many of the if they stop at a booth and they have a conversation with somebody, how many of those booths actually follow up? You know, we're there servicing another client's needs. We're filming in a suite down the hall. We're creating key opinion leader videos for email drip sequences later and for essential buyer's journey content on the website. But we're nerds for this topic. So when my team goes through the conference hall, they're looking at like, what are their video assets look like, right? How are they presenting themselves at the booth? And often they'll end up in somebody's email database because they were waiting to watch the booth loop to see how those assets were being displayed. And our nerdy conversation is how many are really using a email drip sequence to engage deeper and maybe two times out of a conference, and maybe they're in, you know, 40 different companies' databases as they're walking around. And we're not doing for lead gen. We're just looking to see where the industry's going and to keep our feelers. It's interesting to me to see that in 2017, how few people are really using content to lead nurture and how the smart ones are already doing it to amplify their outcomes.
Yep. It's a huge opportunity. Doesn't matter the size of the brand. I've had many a conversation where that strategy is entirely missing, or the same email is going out to the entire audience, and you know audiences are getting smarter. They can feel that. They can feel that the you know this message isn't meant for me. It's meant for me to search through this email and try to find an answer that does pertain to me, and I don't have time for that. So huge opportunity, and definitely an amplification tactic because you're promoting yourself, you're getting in front of the audience, you're promoting that next piece of the conversation, and you're not waiting for someone to ask you another question. It's facilitating the process and very important.
Because what I want to do, and I know this is slightly off track of our main topic, but I love this so much, and I'm riddled with ADD, so just bless me. And what I want to do is after somebody would stop at my booth, I want to track how they're watching our videos. I want to track their attention span. Because that person who's watching, like let's say 80% of the videos in the drip sequence that's a buyer. That's a covert tracking of a buyer.
Yep.
And that gives me an ability to prioritize who to follow up with.
Yep.
And most people don't take that in consideration. Let's spend a moment and talk about the best way to attribute ROI to a strategy. It feels like I don't see a lot of people that are tracking ROI, but that's where the rubber meets the road, right? That's where the great agencies can differentiate themselves from the hacks.
Yep.
And that's where long-term customers are born, right? So how do you attribute ROI back to a tactic?
Sure. So, well, let's use your last example there of meeting people in the real world and then following them to a video view. How do you track that? That's an example of a cross-channel strategy. If you were to track them across, you know, I met them here at this event.
Yeah.
I sent them this link. They watched the video. How did they engage with the video? Then did we have a call to action there that brought them to a form? Did they fill it out? What information did we receive? Now let's retarget them as they start to search and research what I'm offering. And then let's send them one more email that tries to close the deal and see if that converts. So what people are most often doing is attributing ROI to that very last touch, the last email that was sent. 100% of the credit goes to that email.
Right.
So they say, well, let's do more of that email, ignoring the fact that there were five or six touch points before that cultivated that relationship.
It's
so
just like attributing the last date in a new relationship to a conversion when it really took, and we don't need to define what conversion is. I'll leave that to your imagination, but you could really look at the first time you met, the second time you flirted, the third date, the fourth date, and let's say then there's some type of conversion. Like, all of those are essential. It's not just the event that happened right before the conversion.
Yeah, the handshake on the last date that sealed the deal.
Right?
But let's say you went into the first date and did the same thing, probably wouldn't work. So yeah, very appropriate analogy.
That's what I'm here for.
So, you know, taking that into the digital marketing space, we research with the client their paths to conversion, where mm-hmm. people are coming from, and we set up what's called an attribution model. So, you know, which channel is, yeah. So let's say a linear model, we would give equal credit to, let's say we made a $100 sale. And there were 5 touch points. Yeah. So we would give $20 worth of revenue to each touch point that helped get that user to the desired action. So it could be paid social is often making that handshake, that initial greeting. Email is helping them through the process. Paid search retargets them, and a branded search brings them in. So looking at that attribution model, you can better recommend budgets for each of those channels, as well as strategy that's, you know, we're promoting the right content again at the right channel. Like if we're promoting decision stage content in the social channel, unaware that social is bringing awareness and that handshake, we're delivering the wrong message at the wrong point in the journey. So it's not having the desired effect. So it opens up a lot of potential to truly increase your reach and develop that journey.
You know, I look at video as being not a tactic. I look at it as being the best accelerant of tactics. It's like pouring gasoline on a fire, right?
Sure.
And do you consider video a full funnel strategy, or how do you look at it?
Definitely full funnel. And by that, it's good for awareness. It's good to answer consideration stage questions. It's good to provide that assurance that you've made the right decision and now you can take the action required. The reason I don't think it's always thought of in that way, a lot of brands may have pigeonholed it into an awareness play. You know, it's a good place to put my video in front of similar content and let's educate an audience for the first time who we are, what we
okay.
do. Whereas with the right content development, you can then answer specific questions in the consideration stage with video. You can retarget on YouTube. You could retarget on Facebook. You could develop these audience segments where specific content needs to be promoted versus just putting it all out there for every audience. A specific example would be a higher education client that we had where video of testimonials. Let's say nursing students, they finished their program and they filmed right at the end. They had just graduated and they're so excited.
And this is peer-to-peer, right? You're communicating to a potential nursing student that hasn't gone through the course yet.
Exactly.
But you're having the peer that has already had the victory of going through tell their story, right?
Yep. So retargeting audiences that have went through the evaluation process, they've even talked to an enrollment counselor. They're right on the edge of making a decision. It was the perfect moment to send them that victory and that emotion and kind of trigger that and help give them assurance and they're making the right decision.
So the testimonial video fits in a later stage, like a decision stage, because there's no reason to look at a testimonial until you're in the process of deciding if this is the right provider.
Exactly.
Okay. And you know what's funny is when I ask the question, I was headed in slightly different direction. So, but I think you answered it perfectly. And now I'll kind of scoot around to where I was going.
Sure.
I'm not sure you can do a full funnel with just video. It has to be supported with text, right? And really smart copywriting.
Gotcha. So to clarify by full funnel, you know, if you've got, you know, you can have search remarketing that's listening for consideration stage audiences, asking questions and researching, but I could also have a video asset that explains an answer to that particular question. Or back to the beginning of our conversation where brands may promote content, but they didn't do the research and they didn't listen. For example, using that same testimonial video in an awareness stage, it might work or it might be way too soon. It might, you know, it's too soon for them to be emotionally provoked.
Right.
They haven't done the research and they just became aware of you. So it can be used to kind of support those other channels. But it running on its own might be a little tricky without those other supporters.
Those elements.
Yeah.
See, this is why I think dating principles and a buyer's journey or funnel apply so well, because you would never start off with like the guy at the bar that's going in for the hard close. You'd never start off that way with your funnel, right?
Some try,
but some guys do too. And the same thing happens. Their conversion rate is a whole lot lower. Their ad spends would be higher, right?
True.
Because they've got the wrong tactic. But the ones that are optimized are the ones that take a very systematic approach. They're going to start off with awareness. They're going to pique some interest on a topic that you've already got some familiarity around. They'll advance it into a consideration stage. And then the final stage being a decision where you're starting to vet them amongst competitors.
Sure. Definitely. I think, probably what's happening most often is, if anything, a brand identifies an audience and they create content, but they forgot the conversation that needs to occur. And they, in forgetting that, they may sequence their entire play, their entire message out of order. Mm-hmm. So whatever asset they're running on a display channel versus social versus search, it's not congruent. It's not sequential. I find one of the biggest pet peeves of my own is when I'm served the same content I was just served on awareness. It did its job. It got me interested in those pair of hiking boots or, you know, this hiking pack. And then I go and research, I click on the ad, and I'm served the exact same landing page, the same content.
Right.
Like, how do you not recognize that I was just here? Give me the next piece. What should I see now? Is it a video or what have you? It's the best way to get me as a consumer irked enough that I go look at the competitor's product instead. So going off on a tangent slightly.
No, there, I like it. I like pet peeves, because marketers that have pet peeves also are marketers that have been through it enough times where they see very consistent pitfalls that people mistake, that make a mistake. One of the mistakes that I see, I'd love to get your feedback on this, is when companies are trying to prioritize their ad spend, they often carpet bomb an entire population or an interest group with 100% of that ad spend. And it doesn't feel efficient to me. The way I would like people to do it, and this is what I'm interested in, if you think this is a horrible idea, you tell me, okay? Because I'm cool with it. I think people should look at their ad spend and audience engagement like skimming the cream off of the top. And so I would look at segmenting off your viewership on videos based on attention span, and then dropping your audience into different buckets or silos based on attention span. And then maybe one of those buckets is people that watch 95% or more. And then your next bucket is people that watched 85% or more. And then you've got your less than 85%. And then you prioritize your ad spend. Like, let's say your carpet bombing was 60% of your ad spend, just right across the top. And then you listen, because we talked about listening. You have covert data. You segment them off. And then you take that 30 or 40% of your ad spend and you retarget the people that already displayed a higher level of interest. Does that seem like is that a bad tactic?
Not at all. No, I mean, it follows the general rule. And this is dependent on vertical and competition, of course, but general rule is let's cast our net. Let's use all the data we currently have available about, well, what do we know about your audience and where we should be targeting, but let's open up that targeting and then let's study how they behave when they engage with the content. And let's learn from those people who are either finishing a video or finishing an article or filling out a form. Who are they? What made them engage more? And let's retarget them because they're clearly more interested in this other group. And it follows down the funnel. And while our budget overall may be getting less, what does get more is usually how aggressively we're willing to compete for that next click.
Mm-hmm.
So CPCs are not always going to fall as you go down the funnel, but overall budgets may be able to be reduced as we get more specific with the audience. So I think that's definitely a valid tactic for sure.
Cool. It's a pet peeve of mine. And since we turned this into a therapy session about dating and pet peeves, I just lay it out on the table, right?
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm particularly nerdy about this topic. I think that when segmentation starts off, we start off with a novice approach, and then eventually you become more specific in how you're targeting people. Body language in sales historically has been one of the most important communicators.
Yep.
And as I find out as a husband, sometimes I'm reading my wife's body language totally wrong, right? But intent or attention span, which is how long somebody covertly is on the video, or covertly how you're tracking it, I should say, that is much more reliable than body language. Body language in a digital sense would be like, how long were they on the page? And then they bounced, right? Which is just as confusing as our spouse's body language.
When not coupled with other pieces of data, yeah, it can be a little confusing, especially if it's a landing page where there's nothing else to do. You know, does it mean they don't like you? Or is it just not the right time to ask for their phone number? So yes, looking at engagement on video could be a lot more singular in that I just want one question answered. Are you interested or
right.
are you not?
Right.
So yeah, I could see that.
It's interesting. Well, I nerd out on this topic. Look, the team at Vertical Measures, you know, it's obvious that you fit right in line with the rock stars over there. Eric is the director of amplified content at Vertical Measures, the website address verticalmeasures.com, all one word, no hyphen, verticalmeasures.com. They are located in the Phoenix Scottsdale area, but their speakers will be at pretty much any conference. And I think Arnie Ken was just in India.
Mumbai, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm friends with him, so I watched his trip, and it's we travel so much that we joke that Arnie and I will see each other on airplanes, and we'll sit down and we will have the biggest digital marketing nerd talk with his wife in the center seat. We're having the conversation over her, but we always have a great time. And I'm so grateful that you found a few moments to come onto the podcast here and give us some marketing savvy of yours.
Oh, of course. I appreciate the opportunity. And I also like to nerd out on the conversations. Sometimes it's nice to just kind of divvy out the ideas and get some feedback. So I love the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Well, he's Eric Solon. He's the director of amplified content at Vertical Measures. And as I mentioned, verticalmeasures.com. Listen, if you want to know how to guarantee that your videos generate ROI, right? That's where the rubber meets the road. Well, you can always go to wirebuzz.com/ROI. We've created a 5-part mini course where yours truly will walk you through the process of how we guarantee the client videos generate ROI. At the end of the day, you're not going to be judged by how great your video is by your boss. You're going to be judged by what type of conversion, what type of revenue that video created. And the quicker marketers get to that concept and start providing what their boss is really asking for, sure, your boss might have physically said, all right, we need a video. But what they're really saying is, we need a return on investment. And the reason we're choosing video is video does a freakishly good job in conversion or in education. And the faster you educate people, the faster they'll buy. It's just that simple. Wirebuzz.com/ROI. Well, it was great having Eric in studio. You know, it's a lot of fun as a digital marketer, a video marketer, to be able to spend time with really smart, tactical people. I'm actually getting less interested in spending time with creatives and more interested in spending time with tactical people that follow a buyer's journey or understand the principles of digital marketing. And the reason is, at the end of the day, it's the tactical ones that are going to be driving the results. I mean, creative's great. Don't get me wrong. There's a place for creative. You know, we've got one of the best creative young minds in America, Schranz Vanderplug, who runs our video production. The dude's won 2 Emmys and is involved, and his team gets in there and jumps in and does the creative. The reason I'm exhausted by creative is, and it doesn't happen in our office, is far too often creative people miss the mark, but they sure fall in love with the creative, right? And I always want to make sure that strategy is really tight, that we already know what the final destination goal is, and we have that all mapped out. And then once that's mapped out, then you go into creative, but creative needs parameters. And most people don't start that way and their projects fail. You know, a big topic on this podcast is why business videos fail online. And maybe I just answered it, is because they're led by the wrong people. Make sure that there's a happy marriage between strategy and creative so you can execute and prove out ROI at the end of the day. And that to me is the most important part. I'm not comfortable apologizing, right? You shouldn't be either. So that means you have to do the hard work the first time in order to be able to get it right. I was watching the NFL Hall of Fame induction speeches, and what's the guy's name from Miami? His last name is Taylor. Jason Taylor said that ease is a greater threat to growth than hardship. Creatives often jump right in. That's the easy way. The difficult way is to do it right the first time. And when it comes to your video marketing, don't hesitate. Map things out. Do it right the first time. Start in strategy. And whenever you do, oh my God, amazing things will happen. It's often just that simple. Wirebuzz, as I mentioned, today is in Las Vegas. We will be in San Francisco by the end of the week. So we've got a crew that is moving from the Southwest to the Pacific Northwest, creating client content from a conference and then up to creating a video series and package in the Bay Area. Absolutely love it. There's probably have maybe 20 clients, 22 clients between San Francisco and San Jose. And so whenever we go up there, it's a lot of fun. We have our favorite restaurants now. We're up there so often, but good on the team for continuing to go out and create really killer content in adherence to the strategy, right? Just that simple. If you want to get access to the show notes for this episode, all you have to do is go to wirebuzz.com/117. This is our 117th episode. That's where the show notes will be, a kind of a short link, wirebuzz.com/117. Good friend of the podcast, Dan Tyer. Dan is a rock star at HubSpot. And he lives here in the Phoenix area. There's a lot of digital marketing rock stars in Phoenix. Dan Tyer is their director of sales. He comes up here to the Wirebuzz office often. Dan is, he doesn't shake hands. He's a fist bumper. And when you're one of the first employees at HubSpot and you've had a rock star digital marketing career, you can change the games and just go straight up fist bump or elbow bump and call it a day. One day, Dan was in the studio here at Wirebuzz, and we both said something really funny, and we were laughing, and I went up to high-five him, and in the middle of the high-five, I had to pull up the brakes on my swinging hand and turn it into a last-second fist bump, which he caught perfectly. But I saw that he was featured in a CMO Insight tweet, and then somebody replied back saying, "You rock at Dan Tyer. Thanks for the retweet. I give you a high five at Inbound this year." And Dan replied back, and I love this, "Actually, I'm a fist bumper," which is just perfect because, well, I don't know. I just think if you're a fist bumper, you should own it. That dude owns it. Good on you, at Dan Tyer with HubSpot. In a past episode, you might have heard me talk about this study that happened about music. And I think this study is really important for attention hackers. As a marketer, regardless if you're a video marketer or a digital marketer or a print marketer, you are at your core, if you want to be great, an attention hacker, right? People have been doing it in print for 100 years, right? The right copywriting headline, attention hacks, pulls you in, the right vector lines, the right images, the way your eye flows to the text, it attention hacks. Well, there was an important study that looked at the music, the most popular songs in 1985, and we've talked about it on this podcast, that the lyrics back in 1985 to the top songs of the year would take 22 seconds before the lyrics would start. It would basically be like a really awesome guitar riff from Van Halen, and eventually they'd get around to the music. But they started to notice when they did this research study that in 2015, that it only took 5 seconds for the most popular songs to get to the lyrics. And that's because of attention hacking. Now, the music industry's already gotten to it, right? They beat marketers. And you would think that if marketers were really that macho, we would have beat the music industry. You know, like, what is Taylor Swift doing getting there before us, right? I could see CeeLo Green getting to it before, but not Taylor Swift, right? So that type of study is revolutionary when you're thinking about how to use your video, get to the point, and start converting people well. I'm going to be at the National Society of Genetic Counselors Conference speaking in a couple of weeks up in Columbus, Ohio. And you know what's up in Columbus besides, well, besides the Ohio State University and the Buckeyes, the lead researcher who did the study on attention spans in music. And if the good Lord is working on my behalf, I'm going to find an opportunity to sit down and talk with him. And when that happens, you're going to hear all about it right here at Video Marketing Mastery, because it all boils down to the central core of how we hack attention span to convince and convert people at faster rates. Look, on behalf of the team here at Wirebuzz, we're going to continue to do our work behind the scenes. What's going down is we're looking for the latest video marketing news and digital marketing news. And we're going to explain how these things come together. And that'll happen in the next episode, episode 118. And when we bring that information to you, we're going to provide you not only the latest information, but your business takeaway. You're not going to want to miss how to use this latest information to amplify your business results. And it's going down right here on Video Marketing Mastery. Peace.